but that's the old me. Out in out of my window, thrown down, 'cause I don't care anymore. Said I don't care.
Let's go. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you're having a great day today. Hope we can make it even a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. We actually have a special show for you today. And joining me for this show, as he does so very often, please welcome Jeremy Branch.
Hello. Glad to get into this one. This is exciting in its kind of different direction, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we know you guys, at least based on the downloads on our podcast, we seem to get a good reaction on horror. And we're thinking about the fact that we are now 25 years into this this current century or millennium or whatever the heck you want to call it. So we thought it would be fun to talk about what we think are the 25 best horror movies of the past 25 years. And if you like this, we'll do more of this. We're already talking about a science fiction list and a superhero list and a couple others. We felt like horror was a good place to start. And of course, for Jeremy and I, both being big horror fans, it led to a lot of debate and we're trying to come up with a definitive list. So we're not just like going to bounce back and forth on these like we've done a lot in the past when we do like a year-end top 10 or something like that. We tried to like synthesize our picks into one overall list. Now, that was a little bit of a challenge because Jeremy, you've seen stuff that I haven't seen. I haven't seen all the things that you popped up with, but you had seen pretty much everything that I popped up with. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Or pretty close.
Yeah, there's a bunch of like international movies that I had seen that maybe you just didn't hit your radar for whatever reason. And a lot of the ones that came up on your list are things that we probably both saw at the movie theater opening weekend.
Yeah. So what we came up with is when we each did a list of 25, we had 9 in common just from the start. So those 9 automatically became the top 9 and we ranked those. And then after that, we had 16. We each picked 8 and we kind of alternated a little bit. But I think, again, you've seen almost all the ones that were on my list, so you're going to be able to talk about those a little more creatively than I will be able to talk about yours. That being said, 25 movies in an hour, we don't have a lot of time, so we're not going to go in heavily in depth on this. But if you're looking for some great horror movies, this is maybe a great place for you to start.
And worth mentioning that I think both of us were pretty dang unanimous on our top 3.
I think so. Yeah. I don't know if we had them in quite the same order maybe, but I think, you know, I think we're very comfortable with this list overall, and especially the top 9, I'd say it's fair to say. So let's just start out. We're going to go from 25 to 1, just like Casey Kasem did it back in the day. We're going to start with number 25, and that is Guillermo del Toro's Crimson Peak.
Yeah, what a great movie.
Yeah, I think I might be a little bigger on this one than you, and I know this is one that didn't really resonate with audiences. It is a classic gothic horror film in that very classic style, kind of like, to some extent, more recently, a movie a lot more people have seen, Nosferatu, is kind of in that vein as well. But this one was a little more dreamy and maybe a little more romantic while still being horrific. Just beautifully made. And I know Guillermo del Toro is a master of this genre. And I know there's other things we probably should have thought about here, but this is the one that we've got on the list. So definitely worth checking out. Just keep in mind, this is not a jump scare, things coming out and, you know, making you scream kind of movie. This is a more cerebral kind of film. Number 24, Jeremy, this is one that you picked that I haven't seen. I Saw the Devil.
So I Saw the Devil is a South Korean suspense thriller, but firmly placed in the horror genre. It's about a detective who is pursuing a serial killer after a homicide affects his life personally, and it kind of explores the way that we can let retribution make us the very monster that we are, in this case, pursuing. It's really, really good. It's got a bunch of iconic actors in it that you will have seen in other South Korean films, including the star of the movie Old Boy. Definitely check that one out.
Cool. And that's a movie that probably should, could be, I mean, it's a movie we definitely talked about in the run-up to this list, too. Didn't quite make our list, but Old Boy is very widely considered a classic of the genre, even mm-hmm. though it's not that old. These movies, again, at their oldest are 25 years old, so not super, super old. Number 23, and this is the movie that I think has given us maybe the most iconic character that has debuted in the past 25 years to make our list. And that, of course, is the icon of Halloween, Sam, in Trick or Treat. Man, I love this movie. It is so much fun. It is this great little, very, like, knowingly, darkly funny, but still serious and scary. And it tells these overlapping stories that all take place on Halloween in this small, I took it as a New England town. Is that fair to say?
Sounds right, yeah.
Yeah. The stories all overlap with each other, and you see at the end of them how they all cross over each other. Sam is an icon. I can't believe we haven't gotten another one of these movies yet. It's just crazy. But Sam is you know, kind of joining the pantheon, I think. You see a lot of toys of him, a lot of depictions of him, and I think is maybe the most... You think it's fair to say he's the most iconic character in terms of like a Freddy or a Jason or... To come up in the last 25 years?
I'm putting Art the Clown at the top, but maybe Sam second.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair to say Art the Clown belongs in there too, although Terrifier didn't quite make our list. Number 22, this is one of the many very good horror films from Oz Perkins, who had a number of films that we considered for the list, but this one is Long Legs.
Yeah, what a movie. Micah Monroe has become a scream queen of our time. I think she never picks a movie that isn't interesting, including another one that's going to come up a little bit later on the list. But Oz Perkins, son of Anthony Perkins, is a singular filmmaker. He makes movies that are really specific. And as you said, several could have come up on the list. I think Long Legs earned the spot simply because it put him on the map in a mainstream way. And I think Nicolas Cage has just an incredible performance in this movie. I know people find the third act a little divisive, but I think it really works in the movie's kind of dream occult logic. Highly recommend.
Yeah, it's kind of a supernatural Silence of the Lambs in a lot of way.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, and I want to mention, since we're talking about Oz Perkins, a couple other films of his that we talked about possibly making the list were The Black Coat's Daughter and The Monkey, which is his most recent film, which is a really fun, like, black comedy horror film that is well worth checking out. That just came out this year. So, you know, check that out if you get a chance. It definitely should be on streaming by now. Number 21, Green Room. Just a fantastic, like, survivalist horror movie about a band that is on tour. They're a punk rock band. They're booked to play this little, you know, hole in the wall somewhere in the middle of nowhere. And it turns out that it's run by white supremacists. And
I struggle to put it on a horror list, but I'm glad you did because I think it's way underseen. It's Anton Yelchin's last kind of big performance, and it also stars Patrick Stewart as a Nazi.
Yeah, I mean, it's a dark film. It is. I mean, I think it's one of those. And we had a lot of discussion in building this list on what is horror, what is not horror. We, you know, we decided that, like, giant monster films like Godzilla, et cetera, would fall under sci-fi. So if we do get around to doing a sci-fi list, you may see some of those type of movies on that list. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, it's the alien versus aliens thing. Like, Alien was inevitably a horror movie, but Aliens was more of an action movie.
Mm-hmm.
So we parsed this very closely. Green Room is one of those movies that I think really toes the line, but I think it just veers a little bit more over into horror enough to justify putting it on this list. Last one we'll get to before the break. Number 20, House of the Devil, Jeremy.
Oh, man. Ty West's breakout film. It wasn't his first, but it's really the one that put him on the map with, like, kind of indie mumblecore horror fans. It stars Tom Noonan, Mary Warrenov, and Greta Gerwig from Barbie also has a supporting role in it. Heather Donahue's character is a babysitter that takes a job for easy money, and things are not what they appear when she ends up wrapped up in some occult satanic shenanigans. It's like an 80s throwback. A lot of fun. Check it out.
Ty West is a name that we will return to on this list for sure. We're going to take a break. You listen to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, and we are talking about, we're going through our list of the 25 best horror movies of the past 25 years. So just to give you a recap real quick, number 25, Crimson Peak. Number 24, I Saw the Devil. Number 23, Trick or Treat. Number 22, Long Legs. Number 21, Green Room. Number 20, House of the Devil, and we are up to number 19. This is the first of two movies that we're going to mention from the writer-director Ari Aster. And I think that, fair to say, not just the two of the best horror movies of the past 25 years, but probably his two best films. I just saw his new one, Eddington, which I was very indifferent on, but it's also not a horror movie. But Midsommar, man, this is just a fantastic, like, folk horror movie, taking place with this distant Scandinavian village with these weird rituals going on, and how they affect a group of tourists that come in to observe these rituals. The lead in this movie is the amazing Florence Pugh, who is always fantastic in everything, but she's just so very good in this one, in this movie. And this movie just has this iconic imagery in it that has just sustained over the years since it has come out, and has really become, I think, one of the more iconic horror films of the past 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. Okay. Number 18, Jeremy, this is one of your picks, A Tale of Two Sisters.
So this is kind of pulling from the way back. I feel like this one came out mid-2000s, maybe 2008, something like that. It might have even been 2004, but it's another South Korean.
Yeah, it's fairly, I do know enough about it to know it was fairly early in the 2000s. It kind of was one of those ones that, like, there was a big rush of Asian cinema after Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the films that came out in that time period around the same time as things like Hero and, oh gosh, what is the other film that I'm trying to think of that was a big Asian film in that time period? There's a lot of big, this is not a martial arts movie, but there are a lot of big martial arts movies in that time period.
And the ones that I go to are like Audition and Old Boy and Ringu and those kind of things.
Sure.
And it does fit into that kind of niche. It's a pretty elegantly shot movie. It's very aesthetically nice. It's got a gothic kind of throwback classic feel to it. And it's also got one of the most shocking and devastating twist endings of any movie that you'll see. I feel like Shutter Island owes a big debt of gratitude to A Tale of Two Sisters, but this is one I think you should definitely seek out.
Yeah, and you mentioned a number of other films in there. We've talked about Old Boy a little bit already, but Audition and Ringu, absolutely movies that should be considered for, you know, any broader examination of horror over the past 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't quite make our list, but were movies that we definitely discussed. And Ringu, if you don't know, was remade. Actually, Old Boy was remade in the U.S. too. But Ringu was remade as The Ring. And I know,
which I think is a very good movie, maybe even better than the original.
You are bigger on that one than me, my friend.
That's all right.
But we'll leave it at that. Another international film coming in at number 17. And this is a movie, if I recall correctly, we saw together, Jeremy, When Evil Lurks.
We didn't see it together, but we did both see it.
Okay. Yeah, this is an Argentinian film, and it is very much a demonic possession film. This is a brutal, bleak movie, but it is scary as anything you want to see.
Yeah, I really like the way that it handles the zombie slash exorcism genre in a way that plays fresh and very culturally specific. It's a good one.
Yeah, and it's a genre that we've seen like come back a lot in the past, a subgenre, I should say, that we've seen come back a lot in the past decade or so, I guess it's fair to say. But I can't think of anything else from that genre that even really got discussed for our list.
Well, I would say Hereditary kind of falls in that same
ballpark,
but different.
I guess that's true. Which is a movie we'll be talking more about later. I guess that's fair. The only other thing I could think of that we even discussed was the reboot version of The Evil Dead that came out in, was it 2014?
Sure, yeah.
That's the only other one that I think, but there's been a lot of possession movies in the past, especially the last 10 years or so, even another attempt at reviving The Exorcist. Just varying degrees of success, I guess is fair to say. Number 16, Jeremy, this is another of your choices, Watcher.
Watcher, if Green Room is one that would be up for debate as to whether or not it's horror, Watcher would fall firmly in that category. There are no supernatural elements of this film. It also stars Micah Monroe, and this might not be the last time you hear her name
on this list. Definitely not.
It concerns an American woman who moves with her boyfriend over to Eastern Europe, and she doesn't speak the language, so she finds herself more and more isolated, and in a very Hitchcockian way, she realizes that some people in the apartments across the street from her seem to be watching her. Is it all happening in her mind, or is there more sinister forces at play? You'll have to stick around to the end to find out. Highly recommend this movie.
Okay, moving on, number 15. This is another Ty West film. We told you we'd be mentioning Ty West again.
Yeah.
This is X. And I will say that X is my favorite of the trilogy that spun out of this movie. But to me, having this on the list is kind of representative of the entire trilogy.
Yeah, it's tough, right?
Yeah, X was the first one, and it is basically an old school slasher set amongst the making of a porn film in the 70s. So it's kind of got that like grindhouse Texas Chainsaw kind of quality to it, and there's definitely a lot of allusions to Texas Chainsaw in particular in it. But there's some creepy stuff going on here. It's not supernatural, but it is pretty much a slasher kind of film, but leads into this exploration of who the character at the center, the character at the center of the murders in this film is. That is a period piece set in the 1920s, 1930s, not sure, but called Pearl. And then we see a sequel to this movie called Maxine that is more of the three, it's the one I would argue is not a horror movie. It's more of a 80s revenge thriller a la Death Wish or Angel, but all with Mia Goth at the center. You know, we talked about Micah Monroe being a new Scream Queen. Mia Goth is as well, for sure.
Absolutely.
And is a name that I'm kind of surprised that this is the only time we're going to mention in the course of this show. There definitely were some other things that we discussed that she was involved in, like Infinity Pool, although there's some question. Infinity Pool is one of those weird movies that could kind of saddle up to being science fiction rather than horror. But I think ultimately we decided probably it's horror, just didn't quite make our list.
Yeah.
Mia Goth is definitely an icon already. Yeah, for sure. Number 14, The Waiting.
The Wailing.
Oh, sorry, The Wailing. I misread it. My bad.
So The Wailing is another South Korean film, as you can see, and I didn't realize it until we're talking about it out loud, but a lot of South Korean horror films are just way up on my list of favorites. The Wailing clocks in at about 2.5 hours. It is a possession movie, and it is also got a lot of cultural specificity in it. There's kind of like a cop subplot trying to figure out what's going on. Old world clashes with the new. Really disturbing, but highly rewarding. It is obviously, you're going to have to read subtitles with a lot of these movies, but if you're willing to, you know, turn yourself over to it, I think it's a really good movie.
Well, in fairness, I think we're through the majority of the subtitle movies at this point. There might be one or two more, but I think we're through the majority of them at this point.
Okay.
Number 13. This is an interesting choice because this is one that I pushed for being on the list, and it's a movie that the first time I saw it, I walked out of it and was kind of not sure how I felt about it.
Uh-huh.
But the more time that I have spent thinking about this movie, and I've actually seen it again since then too, I saw they did an IMAX re-release. Was it earlier this year or maybe late last year? Got to see it again in IMAX. And just the more time I spend with this movie, the more my estimation of it grows. And that is The Witch.
Yeah. Same experience, by the way.
Yeah, this is Robert Eggers' first film. It's also the film that introduced a lot of us to Anya Taylor-Joy, who is just amazing in this movie. And I guess this is a kind of, a possession movie, too.
Sure.
There is a possession element to this film, although it is more about the seduction of evil and the devil seducing this young woman to become, as he says in the film, "Wouldst thou like to live deliciously?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to become a witch and run away and live in the woods and, you know, cast spells or whatever. It's set in the Pilgrim period. And it is
1950s or something.
Yeah, and it is very much, you know, the language is very much that kind of old English kind of language.
Subtitles ain't going to help on this one, my friends.
Yeah, but it is just masterfully made film. It is beautifully done. And as I said, you know, the first time I saw it, I was kind of iffy on it. But the more time I spent thinking about it, the more I got excited about it. And
yeah,
the second viewing is what really won me over on this film. And it is... it is one that is well worth your time to check out. Number 12, Jeremy, this is Kill List.
Oh, boy, this is such a good one. So there's this director named Ben Wheatley. Ben Wheatley he's an underground icon, I would say, or maybe just an indie film icon. He's done some more stuff recently. There was one that he did with Brie Larson in it. And I think Tom Hiddleston is in one called, like, The Hightower. I don't know exactly. Those aren't the ones I'm talking about, but... this one in particular, Kill List, it's kind of like Pulp Fiction meets The Wicker Man or something. So it's a movie that is highly focused on the occult, and there is a hitman who's got a hit list. And as he checks names off the box, he's drawn deeper and deeper into a mysterious and ultimately like pagan cult situation. Gut punch of an ending. It's really, really cool. I think this movie is an underseen gem that I think if you're really into the genre, you've got to seek it out.
Well, we've got to take a break. We'll be back with more of the list in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Puppet on a string. Love is just like a merry-go-round with all the fun of the fair. One day I'm feeling down on the ground, then I'm up in the air. Are you leading me on? Tomorrow will you be? Puppet on a string.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line. We're going through our list of the 25 best horror films of the past 25 years. I'll give another quick recap here just to get us to where we are at this point. Number 25, Crimson Peak. Number 24, I Saw the Devil. Number 23, Trick or Treat. Number 22, Long Legs. Number 21, Green Room. Number 20, House of the Devil. Number 19, Midsummer. Number 18, A Tale of Two Sisters. Number 17, When Evil Lurks. Number 16, Watcher. Number 15, X. Number 14, The Wailing. Number 13, The Witch. Number 12, Kill List. And we are up to number 11. This is a movie that I just adored, and I think I probably liked more than you did, Jeremy. This is from Edgar Wright. Another name that we will see on this list a little later. He's only made two horror movies, but they both made our list. And that is Last Night in Soho. This is a real like throwback to a very British kind of horror, like the kind of like psychological horror that we saw coming out of the UK in the 60s. I think it's fair to say. And it is kind of a period piece in that it is partially set in the 60s, but it is kind of through this like dream sequence or visions that this young woman is having from the modern era. Again, Anya Taylor-Joy in this. You know, we don't think of Anya Taylor-Joy as a scream queen, but maybe she should be considered for that title too.
She makes interesting choices.
Yeah. Great film. Matt Smith also in this. And what is her name? Thomason. Yeah, I cannot recall her full name, but everybody's really good in this movie. It's really dark and it goes in directions that you don't think it's going to go in. It's another one of those films that you could maybe question whether it's horror or not. And we, you know, obviously we decided that it falls just onto the side of horror. It's a different film. It's a film that not a lot of people saw and that I hope a lot more people get out to see. So check it out. Number 10, Jeremy, this is a movie that I've been meaning to get to that I haven't quite gotten to yet. I've heard not just you talking up, but a lot of people talking up. Lake Mungo.
Lake Mungo is an Australian found footage, screen life subgenre movie. And a lot of people are put off to those, and I think that's understandable. It's speaking a slightly different cinematic language, right? It's not done in a traditional way, but it plays like a documentary, and it's about a girl that goes missing at a lake. It's called Lake Mungo. It's a dried up, used to be a lake. Now it's just like this big dry area. And her family is kind of grappling with this missing person story and the lack of closure. And as the film plays along, we kind of delve deeper into the secrets that the family holds, as well as some external factors that play a part in it. It's got one of the truly haunting, like one shot in particular will be forever burned into my brain as being one of the eeriest, and I'm not trying to talk this up as being some super scary movie, but it puts you in a spell, and that particular shot just really will stick with me till forever. I think it's awesome movie. Check it out.
Speaking of movies that put you into a spell, I think that's fair to say about our number 9 movie as well. This is going to be The Lighthouse. It's another another film from Robert Eggers, who's just a great filmmaker that has made a lot of. Not everything he's done is horror, but I think everything he's done has been interesting. And I think most of what he's done has been horror, is fair to say. I mean, The Northman, I would maybe not say is a horror movie, but certainly this one. And this is another one that you could maybe go either way on saying it's a horror movie, but I think it just falls into that category. It's about two men in this isolated lighthouse, played by Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe. And slowly descending into madness as they're off in this isolated place with nobody else but each other for company. Filmed in black and white. It's a gorgeous film. The performances are incredible. And this is a movie that's going to stick with you.
Legitimately funny also. I think that's something that gets overlooked when talking about Robert Eggers, but he does kind of have a sly sense of humor sometimes, and I think the performances of Willem Dafoe in this and Nosferatu kind of showcase where he is able to bring these really eccentric characters into this world and bring humor out of that. But yeah, like, if it's not horror, what is it? I think that putting it in the genre is fair, and it is just such a good movie.
Agreed. And again, yeah, we're into the top 9 now. So these are all films that Jeremy and I both really agreed belong on any significant list of the best horror movies of the past 25 years. So if you take nothing else from hearing this show, make sure you check out these first 9 movies, the last 9 movies that we're going to talk about, but the first 9 movies on the list, because they're all just absolute bangers. Number 8, we've mentioned her a couple of times over the course of the show, but Micah Monroe once more. This is, I think, so far her crowning achievement. It Follows. Just a,
super cool.
A phenomenal movie, a phenomenal horror movie with just maybe the most interesting thing that you can, that any of these, the most original idea maybe of any of these films that we're going to talk about. It is about people that basically are stalked by a sexually transmitted horror.
Yeah. I call it a STG. It's a sexually transmitted
You have sex with somebody that's you have sex with somebody that's infected, and then this thing starts coming after you. It's a really original concept. It's very well played. It's very scary, and we're finally getting a sequel to this.
That's
in the works now. This is a film that's been out for some time. So
I hope the disaster piece returns for the score, because it's very evocative of John Carpenter's work. The movie wears its Carpenter influences on its sleeve. However, to Julio's point, it is a really original movie. And I like the fact that by not providing like real clean cut answers as to what is going on, it leaves it open to interpretation. I think it's a good think piece.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Speaking of movies with sequels, there's one. The next one has a sequel out in theaters right now. And that is, I think this is also the oldest film on our list too, because I think this came out in 2000, 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a film that completely revitalized and revised the zombie genre, in that, and you know, maybe these creatures weren't exactly zombies. They were infected with a rage virus. And this is the first place we saw zombies that like moved like lightning. Yeah, these are not the slow plodding zombies of the past.
And look at Danny Boyle and Alex Garland's career since the release of this movie. And don't get me wrong, they did stuff beforehand, and Danny Boyle already had name recognition. But like, they're two of the premier filmmakers working today, and 28 Days Later is a big reason why.
And Cillian Murphy too, as the lead of this film. This is one of his early films, and you know, of course, he's since won the Oscar for Oppenheimer. Danny Boyle, of course, has an Oscar as well for directing Slumdog Millionaire. And you know, one of my favorite filmmakers in general. And yeah, he had done a few films that I definitely would recommend you check out before from before this, that were before the 2000. So Shallow Grave is a film that maybe we could have considered if it had come out a little later.
Sure.
It is a very Hitchcockian thriller that maybe verges on horror. But of course, Trainspotting and you know, a number of other things as well. Just a brilliant filmmaker. I'm glad to see him back in the genre. I still need to get around to seeing 28 Years Later. But Jeremy, you saw it and said you liked it a lot, right?
Yeah, it's very good. It's a very, very bold filmmaking.
Number six. This is, I think, fair to say the most meta film on the list for sure. And that is The Cabin in the Woods, directed by Drew Goddard. Who co-wrote it with a guy who's, you know, maybe disgraced himself a little bit in recent years, Joss Whedon.
What?
Although you know, I don't think that takes anything away from the work that he's done. This is a really interesting and funny movie that goes off in a lot of directions that you don't expect. It is absolutely a horror movie, but it definitely has some humor to it, and it has this very metatextual level in that all of the horror in this film is being manipulated behind the scenes by this vast cabal that is sacrificing teenagers to appease this old god. And so we see the things that are happening to these teenagers from their perspective, but then we see the behind the scenes of these, you know, these workaday schlubs that are working in this factory, you know, this that manipulates all of this. And,
in terms of being metatextual, I think this movie is to the broader horror genre what Scream was to the slasher genre.
I think that's fair. Just some really good performances in this with the behind-the-scenes guys, played by Bradley Whitford and Richard Jenkins. Amy Acker, part of that team as well. And then the teenagers, too. One of them, a very young Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah.
This is absolutely worth checking out. This is a very fun movie that you're going to laugh at, and I don't want to spoil the big surprise cameo at the end of the film.
No.
But there is an absolute icon at the end of this movie, and what happens at the end of this movie is takes it to the next level for sure. We're going to take a break. We're back with more in just a moment. Listen, Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Tonight I'm gonna have myself
real good time. I feel alive.
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, and we are talking about the top 25 horror movies of the past 25 years. One more quick recap before we get into the top five. Number 25, Crimson Peak. Number 24, I Saw the Devil. Number 23, Trick or Treat. Number 22, Long Legs. Number 21, Green Room. Number 20, House of the Devil. Number 19, Midsummer. Number 18, A Tale of Two Sisters. Number 17, When Evil Lurks. Number 16, Watcher. Number 15, X. Number 14, The Wailing. Number 13, The Witch. Number 12, Kill List. Number 11, Last Night in Soho. Number 10, Lake Mungo. Number 9, The Lighthouse. Number 8, It Follows. Number 7, 28 Days Later. Number 6, The Cabin in the Woods. And we are at number 5, and that song may have been a clue to you. Although maybe not, because it has become one of the most overused songs in all of cinema over the past 25 years or so. But I'm going to say it right here. The reason that has happened is because of its use in this movie, and that's Shaun of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first place that Edgar Wright, this is the first place a lot of us saw Edgar Wright, first of all. Edgar Wright is the co-writer and director of this film. He's known very well for his collaborations with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, this being the first film of three that they did together, but they also did a TV series before that called Spaced, which is amazing that you should also check out. And then he's gone on to do movies like Scott Pilgrim versus the World and Last Night in Soho, Baby Driver. He's got a remake of The Running Man coming out later this year that I'm very much looking forward to. Among the other things that Edgar Wright is known for is his syncing of music to action in films. And Baby Driver is a masterclass in that, but so is Shaun of the Dead. And there's this scene where the Shaun and all his friends are holed up in a pub trying to hide out from the zombies. And the zombies start crashing into the pub and the jukebox cranks up and this song is playing. And the action is sequenced to this song. They're beating the zombies in time with the music. And it's just this amazing sequence. And if that's all this movie had, it would be a top 25 movie. But it's got so much more. This movie is funny. It pays tribute to the roots of the horror, especially Romero. But it's got heart to it as well. And it is legitimately scary and horrifying. Like Edgar Wright himself has said, yeah, you could maybe call the movie a comedy, but that's because Shaun and Ed are funny guys. But what's happening in this movie to them is very bleak.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a great film, and I think everything you said is right on about it. And it is able to be a true horror and comedy, and neither of them like encroaches on the other in a way that makes it not good. Big fan.
It's one of my favorite films, period. But, you know, if you haven't seen this, you've been sleeping on it for too long. I just watched it again fairly recently, and it's just such a wonderful film. But again, we're in the top five. All of these are wonderful films. And number four is a film that I know a lot of you know very well. Won an Academy Award for its screenplay. and that is Get Out.
Yeah, Get Out. That was the one that kind of proved to the world that comedic personality, Jordan Peele of Key and Peele fame, was more than just a funny guy. And you see these successful transitions from time to time where a person is known primarily for comedy, but then they're able to break out and do something else, whether it's acting in dramatic roles or, in this case, and more specifically, direct horror movies. And man, Jordan Peele knocked it out of the park with a movie that is funny and it's got biting satire in it. It's a really clever kind of deconstruction of racial politics in America today. Got great performances in it, and the whole idea of the sunken place is just a fascinating premise. But like, this movie kickstarted the career of what I would say is one of the best horror filmmakers of the 21st century.
Yeah, to the extent that I think Jordan Peele is certainly more known for horror now than he is for comedy, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Also, I would say kickstarted the career of Daniel Kaluuya, who had done a few other things before this, but this is the one that really brought him into the radar. He got him his first Oscar nomination. He's, of course, since won one. And, and also, shout out to the Gulf Coast, shot here on the Gulf Coast, too. So that's worth mentioning as well. There's a reason this ends up on a lot of, like, even all-time horror lists, because it's that great. And, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of hype around this movie, but it's all well-earned. Speaking of a movie that I think has had a lot of hype around it, and Jeremy and I are certainly guilty of being part of that, this is the most recent movie on the list. This came out just this year, and we'll freely admit that maybe there's a little bit of recency bias in placing this film so high, but this film is a work of art, and it is a film that has stuck with me more than any other film has this year, and the only film I've seen twice on the big screen this year, Sinners.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than just a vampire movie. It's more than just a gangster movie, because it is a gangster movie in as much as it is a vampire movie too. This has so much to say about the Jim Crow era in the United States. It has so much to say about cultural appropriation and about music, and just about how music through the generations affects people.
The idea of it kind of like transcending time and space and connecting people through time is such a cool concept. And as both of us and many of you listening are big fans of music, that's something that definitely resonated. And I think one thing that I want to highlight that often gets overlooked because there is so much to talk about is just that the vampires are actually done really well as a fan of vampires. When you look at movies like From Dusk Till Dawn or 30 Days a Night, the vampires are just kind of like monsters, but in this, they're a lot more interesting, and I really like that about it.
Well, to the extent that you can, and many people have debated on whether, the vampires were right.
Yeah.
In a lot of sense, or that it would be better to become a vampire than to, die.
Yeah.
And there's an argument for it in this film. So, I mean, it's really interesting. Ryan Coogler just made a masterpiece with this film, and it's something else. Interestingly enough, Jeremy, our number two is the second most recent film on the list.
I wonder.
So again, maybe a little recency bias in here, but I don't think so, because we're talking about The Substance. Multiple Academy Award nominations for this film. It did win one. I think it was for makeup and effects, if I recall correctly. But Demi Moore nominated for Best Actress out of this. There was a lot of people saying that it was a shame Margaret Qualley didn't get a supporting nomination for it, but the film was nominated for Best Picture. And this is just a truly gripping body horror film about what it means to age in this society.
And it's all kind of neon and super saturated and colorful and stylish, and Coraline Frigeaux just does an amazing job building a world that isn't exactly our real world, but for the purpose of the allegory of the story, I think it all just works perfectly. The filmmaking is impeccable.
And it is absolutely a horrifying film. This is a film that, again, maybe some people might question whether it's really a horror movie. Aside from the fact that it's absolutely body horror, and body horror is absolutely a subgenre within horror, I mean, I don't think that you can see the final 20, 30 minutes of this film and still deny that it's a horror film.
Fine, move on.
Yeah. I was waiting for you to try to disagree with me, but I guess you're not going to.
We don't have time for it, but I could see if you want to say this is a comedy, I would be okay with that. If you want to say it's a science fiction, I would be okay with that too.
I mean, there's dark comedy to it, certainly. It's satirical for sure, but you know, the best horror has things to say on more levels than just scaring you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Finally, we mentioned this film earlier in the show, so it shouldn't be a total surprise to you that our number one film is Ari Aster's first film, Hereditary.
Man, Ari Aster had done a couple of shorter films, including like Meet the something.
Yeah, Meet the Robinsons is a Disney film.
Yeah. It was.
I kind of want to see Ari Aster's Meet the Robinsons now.
Man, this movie is just a calling card for a filmmaker unlike any other. And he did follow up with Midsommar in a way that I think resonated with lots of people. He's gotten more and more into his self, I think, with the last couple of movies, and I think to more mixed results. But Hereditary, I think, is undeniable, whether we're talking about the performances in particular of Alex Wolff and Toni Collette.
The biggest injustice at the Oscars of the past 25 years is the fact that Toni Collette did not get nominated for this movie. She should have won. Not even nominated. She should have won. Her performance in this film is indelible. This is a very grim movie. It is a possession movie. It is very scary. Go see this movie if you haven't seen it yet. This is not a jump scare movie. I know that there were some people that were iffy on it because of that. But this is a movie that's going to stick with you. Unfortunately, we can't stick with you. We're out of time. But Jeremy, you said you had something else you wanted to mention here real quick.
Yeah, I would love to just let people know to head over and check out Jeremy Branch on YouTube. If you enjoyed this type of content, I've got more on the way over there inspired by this very conversation. So head over there and take a look.
All right, so check that out, and we'll see you back here next week. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.